comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. And it's the show where you matter. Now, tomorrow night... Tonight... I've got my days mixed up here. That's okay, I'm an old guy. I get away with stuff like that. Tonight is K-Files night. That means that following the show tonight, we will begin sending out the K-Files. That's our free weekly newsletter. You want to be sure that you are subscribed to the K-Files. It's free, and there's no reason not to be subscribed. All right? You can unsubscribe whenever you want to. In this edition, I have an article about a new picture from Mars. When I say new, you know, look, the picture may have been around for a while, but it's not one that I've dealt with before, and it's fairly recent because it has to do with the Opportunity rover. It photographed something. NASA says that's what we're heading. We're heading the rover there to take a look at this something. And my article deals with, I don't think so. I really don't think so. If you look at the picture, I think they're looking at something else. It's in the picture too. And I think what they're telling us is a misdirection to get us to focus on that while they go focus on something else. Now, I could be wrong. But you want to be sure that you get this week's edition of the K-Files because I've got the picture in there. And not only do I have the picture, I brightened the picture up, changed the contrast so you could see a little better, and then I zoomed in on something, and it isn't what they say they're going to look at. It's something else. And if they're not going to look, if they have no interest in looking at the thing that I point out in this article, they really, really, really need to have their funding reconsidered, because this is really, really something they ought to be looking at. So you want to be sure and get the K-Files this week, this week's edition. The article is in there, complete with the photographs. You want to be sure that you see it. How do you do that? Well, you go to my website, which is kevinsmithshow.com. And the biggest link on that page, the biggest link, says K-Files. It's right in the middle of the page. You can't miss it. Some do, but you really can't. It's there. Like I said, you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And I don't sell that list of email addresses. I don't sell those, rent them, loan them out, lease them out, none of that. Never have, never will, and so you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed to the K-Files. Go ahead and subscribe. It's free. Tonight, we've got a very special guest. You don't want to miss this. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Here in the United States, and as a matter of fact, all over this side of the planet, nighttime has settled in. And from one side of the hemisphere to the other, from north to south, east to west, it's nighttime. And at nighttime, the thing we do is the Kevin Smith Show. On the other side of the planet, in various time zones, people are listening to the Kevin Smith Show. In Morocco, there's a group of students up early this morning listening. All over the UK, we have people up listening 3 o'clock in the morning in their time zone, listening to the Kevin Smith Show. All over Asia, people are listening, and Australia as well. And even in Africa, people are listening to the Kevin Smith Show all across Africa. And I can't think of a better guest for all of us to enjoy than our guest this evening. Her name is Phyllis Galdi, and she is the owner and publisher of Fate Magazine. Phyllis, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Phyllis, Fate Magazine is older than I am, and I'm old. It is a success story, pretty much unparalleled, I think, in the history of publications here in the United States of America. What is 62 years it's been around?
That's correct. It's the oldest, longest-running paranormal magazine in the world, I believe.
Let me share a little bit about Fate Magazine, and then I'll let you pick up and tell us some of the new developments. But for those, just about everybody's heard of Fate Magazine, but for those who may not know some of its history, it was established in 1948. It was established by Ray Palmer and Curtis Fuller, and in its very first edition, there was an article by none other than Kenneth Arnold. He's the pilot that spotted those strange-looking craft that he said were skipping along as if you skipped a saucer on water. From that, the news media picked up the term flying saucer. He didn't describe them as that. That's the news media that did that. But that's where it came from, and he wrote an article that was in that very first edition. In 1955, Ray Palmer sold his interest out to Curtis Fuller, who, along with his wife, Mary, took full control of Fate Magazine. And they handled that for years. In 1988, the Fullers sold to Llewellyn Publishing. Llewellyn Publishing changed some of the format, but continued to publish Fate Magazine. And by the way, under Curtis and Mary Fuller's administration, the magazine grew to 100,000 subscribers, which is substantial. And then Llewellyn took over, and they changed it from its digest format to a full-sized magazine format. September 2001, another big change happened. The editor-in-chief of Fate Magazine at that time was Phyllis Galdi, and she purchased the magazine and became not only its editor-in-chief, but she is its owner, she is the publisher, and she is still in charge of getting Fate Magazine out to all of us. It has undergone some changes under her administration as well. Phyllis, tell us a little bit about some of the changes that it has undergone and the big news as of this month.
Well, as you know, publishing has been quite an interesting challenge in this last 10 years. You know, it went from 100,000 to probably down to something like 10,000 readers, but we still hung in there, and we kept on with the print magazine and the online magazine. It's just been a beautiful wonderful, challenging experience. And if one believes in ghosts and UFOs, we've had some definite personal experiences along the way dealing with this. But anyway, Fate Magazine went from a Reader's Digest size to a large, like Time and Newsweek size, and we just felt that it didn't really quite reflect the energy of the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So we changed back to the Digest size, and that was a huge decision. I was really scared to do it. It's amazing how fear dominates so much of our life. We play along with the status quo, even if it isn't the right thing to do, just because it's a familiar thing. But anyway, we were really hesitant about doing it. But above and beyond all expectations, our readers loved it when we put the magazine back to digest size. Because it was like, 2002, I think, that we went back. So it was, for 40 years, it was Reader's Digest size, and then for about 10 years, it was Time Newsweek size, and then we put it back to the Digest size, and people were overwhelmingly supportive and responsive, because it was part of the energy or the identity of Fate, is that everyone, you could put it in your purse, you could put it in your pocket, you could carry it wherever you went. So we've really, really been happy with the response that our readers have given us, that it's kind of the identity of Fate, and they're happy to have it back the way it was. So we have tried to keep that retro energy and that retro look of the bygone years. The information and the news is new, but the feel and the personality has remained the same of the old Fate.
I know people who saved all their old issues of Fate magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are people that save all their old National Geographics.
Exactly so.
And I know people that have stacks of old Fate magazines that they've saved for years and years and years, and I would imagine are collector's items now.
Yes, yes, they are. It is absolutely amazing how people pass on their magazines, even though they were like pulp magazines. They still save them because there's some energy in them, or some personality, or some identity that made them very precious to people.
Now, you went through, Fate magazine went through a period of time where it was published only electronically, right?
Yes, yes. Part of the last year, we went through a hiatus, a reinvention, a challenge. Like a lot of other things in our economy, has occurred here in the last year, but people were really supportive and insistent that we go back to printing the actual hard print edition. So with the September-October issue, which is at the printer as we speak, we have gone back to offering both the print edition and the online e-version.
Well, someone from your office sent me the electronic edition, this September-October edition, and it is absolutely packed with good information, very interesting articles, and a wide variety of topics, and it has the appearance that Fate magazine traditionally had. And I think it's going to be very well received.
Well, thank you. We sure hope so. Yes, we really seem to get a lot of interest about the retro and the nostalgia. People are certainly interested in that. And, of course, part of that was the War of the Worlds that H.G. Wells laid on us back in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the artwork for the cover... I know now this particular issue is, you have some of the artwork of that you're featuring art of a famous artist in our genre that you're featuring in the magazine, but the cover art for the magazine, is it going back to the retro style cover, or are you going to stick with the sort of Time Newsweek sort of cover, even though the size is different?
Well, actually, you know, I have to tell you that fate writes itself. It's really an unusual thing that I consider, well, David Godwin and myself are the principal editors, and it's like the magazine tells us what to do. I know that sounds really strange, but it's like we'll get information on a topic, or we'll get two or three articles, and then it's like, you know, Norwegians being a Norwegian American, you got to hit me over the head with a 2x4 before something gets through my thick skull. But fate is very insistent on what it wants, so we try to be really respectful for that. And in this story, I don't know if you had a chance to look at my article in I See by the Paper, how this came about. Frank R. Paul was a really, really famous science fiction illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
He started, in the 30s and 40s and 50s. I mean, he was extremely prolific, all the fabulous artwork that he did. And then I had an opportunity. Someone presented me with a beautiful art collector's book that featured a lot of his art. And I, well, why don't you do a review on it, this gentleman said. And, maybe. And I just kind of kicked it aside and thought about it. And then I have this DNR-protected wetlands north of my house where I go out there and get my head on straight and my sanity and get away from the world. And it's like there's some real magical energy about there. I've had a lot of strange psychic experiences out there. But anyway, one day when I was walking my dogs out there and just kind of hanging out with nature, Mr. Frank R. Paul, this famous science fiction writer who died over 50 years ago, he literally manifested to me and says, "Oh my gosh!" It was like really bizarre, because sometimes I see things from other dimensions. And he said, "Well, I'd really like my art to be, you know, noticed by people and for people to see it and hear it and learn about it." So he was real insistent that he wanted his art work to be noticed by people. And I thought, well, okay, I'll think about that, because it's like kind of hard to turn down a request from beyond the grave from somebody. And then
I would think so.
It was kind of cool, because I didn't know if it was really going to work. You know, you have all these options, and it's hard to pick what you want to feature and you know, what's going to be included in the magazine. We have to be really selective, because we might get 50 articles, and we can pick, you know, 10 or 12 of them. But then it seemed like, you know, it might not work out. It just was like a lot of complications, a lot of details in that. And then he appeared to me again, and he was just like kind of like a little kid, like kicking a can or kicking a rock, like, doggone it, you know. He was just frustrated and angry that it wasn't going to happen. So the fact that he appeared to me again kind of cemented or solidified his determination, I guess, from beyond the grave to be present in the magazine. So I just, we got to do this, whatever we have to do to make it happen. And it's absolutely spectacular, his artwork. It's just beautiful. It's just, it's so neat, because the magazine writes itself. It tells us what it wants to have in it.
Well, and you know, his artwork brings to life, helps you to visualize and brings to life some of the sci-fi themes that were handled in a lot of comic books, and that were handled in a lot of articles, and you know, because it sort of melds the real UFO extraterrestrial kind of reports that come in with something visual that helps, you know, it helps tell the story. And it's really impressive artwork. Phyllis, how did you get involved in all of this?
Well, I guess I was just a normal farm girl from North Dakota. I have four older brothers, and my parents were farmers in Nodak, and I was not quite like the rest of my family. I remember my earliest experiences when I was a little girl. Mom would come in and say my prayers and kiss me goodnight and that, and then she'd leave and go back to their bedroom, and I would see things in my bedroom. And it scared the crap out of me. I was so frightened because I could see a ghost standing in my doorway. I knew it wasn't real. It was like something out of Poltergeist or Ghost. You know, I could see right through it. I knew it wasn't a real entity. But anyway, every night I saw this entity standing in my doorway, and I was absolutely terrified. So I would get up, shut my eyes, and run through this thing standing in the doorway of my bedroom, and run and jump in bed with my parents because it was so real and it scared me so bad. Well, then when I grew up and went away to college and came back, and then my mother informed me that my grandfather had died in that room, like, duh. I think if they would have told me that when I was a little kid, I wouldn't be so scared, because I thought that thing that I saw every night in my bedroom was going to kill me or hurt me or do something bad. Mm-hmm. I was just absolutely terrified. And then after we grew up, we had seances in the old family farmhouse. Nobody lived there anymore, but it was kind of our summer cabin. So we had some just absolutely fabulous psychic experiences and information and revelations and confirmation. So it just opened up my whole world.
Wow.
So I guess, you know, all I was interested was, you know, Dracula and Frankenstein and scary movies, even though it scared me. I was so fascinated with all this stuff that was...
I think a lot of us are like that. You know, a lot of us, you know, I think it's kind of why we ride roller coasters and things like that. A lot of us are we enjoy the thrill of getting scared. We have a break coming up, and we're going to step away. When we come back, more with Phyllis Galdi. Stay tuned. We are talking this evening here at the Kevin Smith Show with Phyllis Galdi, and she is the owner and publisher of Fate Magazine, a real institution when it comes to publications in America, and certainly in the realm of the paranormal. But among publications of any type, it's an institution. Phyllis, we were talking about, you grew up in, I think you said South Dakota, right?
North Dakota.
North Dakota. Okay, well, both Dakotas are, their history, of course, is populated with Native Americans, and of course, they have a more spiritual sort of perspective, a different perspective on the world and the universe. Do you think any of that, just in the culture around you, influenced you any?
Well, very definitely, it could have been peripherally. I remember when I was a very young girl, we would go out in our pastures west across the river. We lived in the Cheyenne River Valley in east central North Dakota, and we would dig for bones and Indian things. And when they dug our underground gas tank, We found a peace pipe, which was extremely ancient, which came from Pipestone, Minnesota, and also, well, it was probably dug like, you know, 15, 20 feet. They put up like a 500-gallon gas tank that they buried in the ground. And we found a buffalo bone that was extinct for a very, very long... It was a knee bone of a buffalo, and it had been extinct for a very long time. And yeah, of course, those kinds of things have to influence you because you've got history right there in your yard. And then when we'd be picking rocks from our fields, because we had a diversified farm, we would raise cattle and sheep and pigs, and then we also raised grain and corn, and you know, we'd be out picking rocks, and we found meteorites, we found incredible pre-Native American kinds of camp tools, and sometime I'll send you pictures of them, and they were like pretty good size granite gosh, I guess you'd call it kind of like rocks or camp tools or something that you would use to chop trees down, and they were pointed on one end, but I've had archaeologists look at them, and they said they almost predated Native Americans. So we kind of grew up with this history and this culture, so it was absolutely fascinating, and it made you think about, as a dumb little farm kid, that there was a lot of other things that you didn't know about. And I remember one time back in the 50s, I was very, very small. I'm very old, you know. But my mother and I were coming home from our little small town, and this was pre... Now they've got mercury yard lights, so there's really no dark anywhere in the United States. But mm-hmm. back then, this was before they had those mercury yard lights, so you had light pollution everywhere, and you had to turn on your yard light with a switch in the house to have light. Anyway, Mom saw, I swear it was like a UFO. We stopped the car, and I was like 5 or 6 years old. I was real little, and we got out of the car, and it was pitch dark, and it was, you know, like I said, in the early 50s, probably 1952, and we stood and we watched this light go sweeping across the sky, and it was definitely not a meteorite because it looked like it was intelligently controlled, and then all of a sudden, poof, it just disappeared. And I was like, okay, cool, and we just accepted it. It wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't anything horribly unusual. We just figured, yeah, there's UFOs, there's things out there that we don't know about. So I'm really lucky to have grown up in that culture with that open-mindedness.
You know, now the statement I'm about to make may be way too broad. It may not actually apply, but I think it does. I'm 57, and so I've observed a number of decades, and I've observed the changes that we've all been through in these decades. Plus, I've lived all over the world, including in the jungle. And it seems to me that people in areas that are less technologically advanced are more open and accepting of something like what you just described. They see a UFO and it's, yeah, okay, it's there. And the more technological a society gets, it seems they are more prone to try and explain it away. Now, maybe I'm painting with a brush too broad, and I know it doesn't apply to everyone because it certainly does not apply to me, nor to you, but it seems, you know, in broad terms, that's sort of the case. The more technologically advanced a society is, the more prone they are to explain these sort of things away instead of just saying, well, yeah, there it is. What do you think?
I think that totally makes sense, yes, because I, like I said, I'm just an ignorant, if you will, farm kid. I was a good student. I could spell and read and write, and do my ciphers, all that. But I remember when I was real, real young, too, that I grew up in a small town. I had 7 people in my class. There were probably 100 people in the whole town. And one night at Christmas program or something, my brothers and some of the other high school kids said, there's lights going on out of town. And everybody dashed out of the school building and jumped in their cars, and they drove west out of this little town chasing this light. And it was just like, 15, 20 below in the middle of the winter in North Dakota. It wasn't really warm. It wasn't something you did, but it was like, it was just something. There was a light that was like dashing, going west in the sky, so all the kids jumped in their car and chased it to follow it, and it was like, wow, that's cool. We didn't think anything, didn't rationalize it. We just wanted to see what it was, because like I said, it was pre-satellite and pre-yard lights, and we just accepted that there was something strange out there, and we wanted to find out more about it.
Well, there are people, and a great many of them, who are open-minded and just want to know, they realize that what everybody says is impossible still happens sometimes. And they just want to know, they want to see it, they want to know about it. They're not trying to rationalize it. One of the things that really sort of, I've watched this develop in the UFO world, in the community of people that are interested in UFOs, I've watched this develop. And that is a demand for proof. Well, you see, the problem is you can't even prove you exist. Not really. You can provide evidence that you exist, but you can't really prove it. Because in the final analysis, it could all just be in the observer's head. And that's where we're left. But let me ask you something. You grew up on a farm, and you talked about you raised pigs, and you raised cows, and you raised sheep. How many cows would you say you've seen in your life? Now, this is really going somewhere, I promise. How many cows would you say you've seen in your life?
Oh, my gosh, probably over 1,000. We would usually have at least 100 head of cattle every year.
All right. In all your life, have you ever seen a cow that someone could have come along later and convinced you was a Cadillac?
No.
But that's exactly what we allow people to do with UFOs. We see it. We know that's not a flare, that's not a balloon, and that's not a Chinese wedding lantern. Don't know what it is, but I know it's not those things. It's not a helicopter. It's not Venus. I don't know what it is, but it's none of those things. But then we allow somebody to come along later that's got some sort of credentials, and they start talking about, well, it was misidentification. It was really this. It was really that. And they'll convince us it was Venus when it was zipping around the sky and zigzagging. Or they'll convince us it was Chinese wedding lanterns when it was, at an altitude of probably 60,000 feet, which, of course, Chinese wedding lanterns can't fly that high. In the world of UFOs and in the world of the paranormal, we allow people to convince us that our eyes lied to us and our minds are defective. And I think that's a tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I guess that's what fate is all about. We have something more than 20,000 people's personal experiences about paranormal things, whether it's ghosts, creatures, UFOs, and over and over, people have these personal experiences, and that's the heart and the soul of Fate Magazine, is people's personal recollections and personal experiences. How can you argue with that? So some person tells you they don't exist, but like, hey, wait a minute, I saw this, I experienced it, this happened to me. And I think that experiential evidence is really important.
Well, and part of it is we tend to judge other people's experiences instead of just accepting them. For instance, I give you a good example. Now, those who are watching our TV channel, all you see is you see me, and you see a photograph of Phyllis, and you see a little bit of artwork on the screen, and that's it. And behind me, it's all black. But I'm telling you that I'm sitting in a room that is absolutely packed with books, and there are over 500 books on these shelves in this room, and you can't see them because the camera isn't pointed at them. So if I tell you I'm looking at over 500 volumes, 500 books in this room, you have to make a decision. One decision would be you can believe me. And my question is, why should you? Another decision is you could decide to believe in the negative and believe I'm lying. And my question is, why would I? There is another decision, which is you could just say, okay, he says there's 500 books, there must be 500 books. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to disbelieve it. Just accept it. But I can tell you that's absolutely the truth. It's absolutely the case. There are over 500 books in this room, and you can't see them because they're not, the camera's not aimed at them. But the same thing would be true if somebody says, I saw a ghost. Well, I didn't see it. That doesn't mean they didn't see it. And why not just accept the fact that they're probably telling us the truth?
It's too simple. It's too easy. We make things complicated in our lives. Our politicians make things complicated. Our government does. We create all this doubt, so you it's like you don't have any strength of character. You doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and then here's another thing. I think the observer is probably the most accurate witness. I'll get into that when we come back. We have to step away for a break, but we'll be back with Phyllis Galdi, owner and publisher of Fate Magazine, right after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Phyllis Galdi. She has been called the First Lady of Paranormal, and I think she sort of fits the bill. She is the owner and publisher of Fate Magazine. And I know I said I was going to come back to what we were just talking about, but Phyllis, because of time constraints, I've got to get into this a little bit. Fate Magazine does present a lot of what a lot of people would call edge information. And there are, of course, people that scoff at edge information. They think it's silly and so forth. And yet, time proves that a lot of that edge information was accurate. And it was real. There are people that thought that Kenneth Arnold was hallucinating, but guess what? There are generals and government officials who have gone on the record now in this new book by Leslie Kane. And they say, you know what? It's real. It's very real. And they've gone on the record with it. So Fate Magazine has published a lot of that edge information. But at the same time, Fate Magazine has from time to time taken on what they consider to be, what the magazine considered to be obvious false claims, and they've the magazine has from time to time taken that on and exposed what they thought were false claims. Over the years, because you were editor-in-chief of Fate before you were the owner, so you've been with Fate for a number of years. Over the years, what stands out for you as probably the most impressive story that you published?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question to answer. I guess if you're talking about exposes, Fate has always been a rational, objective look at the paranormal. I have to tell you this. Do you know the definition of a level-headed Norwegian?
No. Huh? What is it?
Okay, a level-headed Norwegian is one who's chewing tobacco drains out of both sides of his mouth. and being in, you know, Norwegian American, I like to look at myself as an objective kind of person. We're really skeptical. We don't buy everything. We don't believe in everything. And Fate has always offered people a rational look at strange phenomena. You always look at reasonable things before, you know, oh, I heard the floor creaking. Well, it must have been a ghost. Well, no, maybe the dog was walking through the room in the dark. So we always, we're definitely not a true believer kind of magazine. I guess I don't know that this story impresses me, but remember the Miss Cleo thing, you know, the psychic hotline stuff?
Yeah.
And Lloyd Arbuck cautioned people, for gosh sakes, don't believe in this stuff. Don't spend your money on it. And we really tried to be the voice of reason, because this was like, you know, oh my gosh, this psychic knows all the answers to my problems. And it was just really a money-making scheme. So we tried to warn people about things like this, that the sensational answer isn't always the best and right answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a real important service that Fate has done, to always look at a rational explanation for something strange instead of jumping to conclusions.
Well, I think it's important. You know, this show deals with, our genre is the genre that Fate deals with. We deal with UFOs. Mm-hmm. We deal with anything that's paranormal. We also deal with futuristic science that's beginning to come into reality, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then we deal with space exploration, and I'm not sure that Fate does that too much, but everything else.
Oh, a little bit. I mean, we interviewed Michio Kaku here early last year, and that was really a fascinating exploration into the cutting edge of science,
mm-hmm.
and space.
Well, he's a fascinating interview, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's a brilliant, brilliant man.
And a nice person,
and
fun to talk
like
with.
Even Hawking, they think that the space people are so much smarter than we are that they probably look upon us as cockroaches. We're just like stupid idiots.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe
some of them do. I don't know. I'm not so much smarter than the rest of us. I'm just like the rest of us. But I step back and look at us sometimes and wonder how in the world we made it till today. Because of some of the boneheaded stuff that we as a species do.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, you know, so I would think that space people must look at us that way too if we look at us that way. I would think they do sometimes look at us that way. But now let me ask you this. Was there ever a story that came across your desk that when it first came across your desk, you said, oh, no, this can't be. Oh, this is just nonsense. And then the more you examined it and the more you looked at the evidence they were providing in the story, you became, it won you over, and you published it. Have you ever had that happen?
Well, I can think of one article in our upcoming September-October issue, Brad Steiger, that he interviewed this famous person in Hollywood who had an actual experience. about a UFO being alive, that it was a sentient being. And I always thought there was just technology. They're hopped in a spacecraft, just like your usual sci-fi thing. And that really got me to thinking. And then he talked to Trevor Constable, who I think he's just an absolute genius, very smart man. And it just gave my I had to wrap my head around that, and had to scratch my head and like, wow, maybe this is possible, because it's like, you know, the day the Earth stood still, Klaatu, you know, the guy comes out of the spaceship, it lands, and then somebody comes out of it. But in this revelation about the, I think Mr. Fay was his name, he told a story to Brad Steiger that he saw this. He and his wife were out in the country, could have been like out in Arizona, maybe your neck of the woods. And they watched this thing, and it was like it was pulsing, like it was alive. The actual ship was like a sentient being, because of the way it moved. And he said that there's no beings, aliens, human, whatever, could have survived the velocity and the movements and the stuff. And I just thought, you know, that really, of course, it hasn't been proven yet, but it just opened up my mind to a whole different thing. And then they talked about if this is true, then there's free energy, if this spaceship is actually alive, it's another life form, then we have the option of using free energy, and we don't need all this ridiculous games and politics and charging for gas and energy, that there is this possible capability of free energy for our world. I just thought that, wow, this is like, yeah, blowing my mind. It's pretty cool to think about.
And that's in this edition of Fate magazine, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the current edition, it's at the printers now.
That is correct.
Okay, so when is it going to be available for people to buy?
Well, it the e-edition is actually available right now. What is it, like, I think it's what, $5.95?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, anyone can contact our offices, and we'll send an electronic version of it to you, like, immediately.
Okay, and the printed version, when will that be available?
That'll be available in about 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks. All right. Now, Phyllis, well, I've got time to ask this if you answer quickly, because we have a break coming up. Do you accept submissions, article submissions from the public?
Yes, oh, definitely. That's the whole basis of Fate, is it's a people's magazine. We are just stewards of it. There's no grandiose gurus that write it. It's folks like you and me and everybody who's had a personal experience. So yes, we definitely accept submissions from everybody.
Okay.
We review them. We can't publish everything we get, but we sure look at everything we get.
Well, fair enough. Okay, we have to step away for a break, and when we come back, I have another question or two, and then we'll open up the telephone lines for our audience to join us. So get your fingers ready to do the dialing, folks, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Phyllis Galdi, and she is the owner and publisher of Fate Magazine, a true institution in publication and a true institution in the world of the paranormal. Phyllis, you have some everything. I was asking about, do you accept submissions from the public, and you said yes. But you have some big name, big gun writers that write for Fate magazine as well. For instance, Brad Steiger. So you have a mixture. You've got some big names, and then you got some everyday Joes that write articles that you publish. How would someone go about finding out what they need to do to submit? Do you have submission guidelines that you send them?
Yes, they're on our website. Our website is just punch in Fate Magazine and will come up, and the actual website is www.fatemag.com, fatemag.com, short for Fate Magazine. And the information is there, but you can email us at fate@fatemag.com and say, hey, I had a cool experience, what should I do? And we'll give you some further guidance.
Okay, so anybody that's listening. Now, do you accept submissions from any place in the world?
Oh, definitely. We publish articles from literally all over the world.
Okay. All right. Tell you what, I want to open up the telephone lines and allow our audience to join us. And it may be, ladies and gentlemen, that you have a question or comment for Phyllis Galdi. I know many of you are fans of Fate Magazine, and you have been for a number of years. I know some of you have a collection of past editions of Fate Magazine, and you will be able to start collecting them again because they are coming out in print again as of the September-October 2010 issue. That's the one that's at the printers right now, so that's big news. The telephone numbers are 623-444-5889. That's the main number here in the studio. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599, and that works in Canada and the USA. If you're outside of Canada and you're outside of the USA, I don't have a toll-free number for you out there. The main number will work, and we'd love to hear from you. All right? Or you can go to my website and use the flash message option, but that's reserved for people outside the USA and outside of Canada because of the fact that I don't have a toll-free number for out there. Okay? If you're in the USA or Canada, I've got phones, and I'll even pay for the call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi, and hi to your guests there. I really don't have a question for, except for I do enjoy Fate Magazine, and I frequent the site quite a bit. Very interesting. But she did bring up one thing that that I thought about two nights ago when you were talking about that Red Rain. And she was talking about how the flying saucer seemed to be alive. And it dawned on me that I was thinking, like, those white objects that we've seen around the shuttle and that tether. And how huge some of them estimated it to be, and that they could probably be alive. And I just wonder if you two, I don't know if she's seen the show or not, would be possible that, you know, something like that dying and, say, disintegrating into the atmosphere and maybe being reborn that way would be a option. I don't know if you talked about that at all that night.
Well, we didn't talk about it that night, but and the reason we didn't is because I had not thought of that. I think that's an excellent idea. Phyllis, what we're talking about is in 2001 in Kerala, India, it started raining. As a matter of fact, it rained for 3 months, monsoon season, and the rain was red, crimson red. And when they collected the water, some scientists, some physicists, collected the water and bottled some samples. And it's got cells in it, and they're red. They look like cells. But the weird thing is they don't have any DNA. And everyone thought they were just inert and didn't know really what they were. Now they've discovered if you heat the solution up to 572 degrees, these things come to life and they replicate. But they don't have DNA. And so what Terry in Ohio is saying is it possible that some of these massive entities that we see out in space, maybe one of them died and its remains fell to Earth, and maybe that's the red cells.
What immediately comes to mind is Mars, because there's so much red energy and the soil and the possibility of life on Mars. That maybe it's something that came from Mars.
It might be. What do you think about that, Terry?
That's one of Kevin's ideas. I don't have anything else, so I'll get off the phone and let somebody else in.
All right. Thanks. Thank you for the call, Terry. All right. Let's see. I lost that call because I pushed the wrong button. Pilot error. So, caller, I apologize. You were trying to call in, and I pushed the wrong button, and it cut you off. It was unintentional, I promise you. 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send a flash message and we will read it here on the air. Now, let's take this call, and then I have a flash message that says it's from Antarctica. Okay, well, we'll see about that. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jerry Wills. I'm calling from New York in the Chappaqua area. How are you guys tonight?
Good. How are you, Jerry?
I'm doing great. I was real excited to hear that your guest was on the show tonight. Let me get away from the transmitter here. We've got a group of people over listening to the show, so I'm just going to move away to the other side of the house.
Okay. And let me say hi to the group of people.
Yeah, well, we had a group of people to to watch the show tonight. I told everybody about it.
Good deal. Good deal.
The question that I had, it really isn't a question. What I wanted to say, it's Phyllis, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Yeah, hi. You know, when Fate magazine was being published, and this was a few years ago, I know, and I don't remember how long ago it was, but I used to get that, I picked it up, and I read every one of them. I thought it was just fantastic. When it disappeared, it was kind of a bummer, and I followed you guys online. And I met a fellow named Ron Quinn down in Tucson who told us all about you again and how he'd written stories for you, especially about the portal down in southern Arizona. It stimulated our interest, and we went down and did a video about it. And what I wanted to say to you is basically thank you for all that you've done up to this point in time to keep Fate magazine alive. And that for my wife, Kathy, and I, it's been an inspiration for us to go on and do our own thing, Expeditions TV. You've been instrumental, I'm sure, in a lot of people's lives. And what you're doing now is continuing that work. And, everybody appreciates it. We're all looking forward to getting that first copy. I can't wait. I tuned in a little late. Maybe you could reiterate how we can go about getting that copy. Do we go online and order it? How do we subscribe? Any details would be greatly appreciated.
Oh, sure. First of all, I have to say I'm really jealous that you got to go down to film Ron Quinn and hike up in the mountains there. That's been my dream now for the last couple of years, and dadgum, I'm going to do it here this next year, because he said it's pretty tough hiking up there in the mountains. And I want to know if you had any bizarre experiences yourself, any things, you know, doorways that were there one time and weren't the next time, and portals and that. I'd love to hear about your experiences down there in Superstitious Mountains.
And well, you know something? We have, we took the cameras, we did a short documentary about it. Ron Quinn is interviewed on this documentary. You can see it at expeditionstv.com. I'm not trying to give a shameless plug, Kevin, sorry.
Why not?
But if you look for, I think it's called Doorway of the Gods, it's a video. You can go there, it's free, you can watch it. And you'll see Ron, and you'll see what we found. Actually, the strange thing is the original doorway is gone, the original arch. But strangely enough, there's another one that has formed that wasn't there.
Wow.
And we have all that on tape, and it's all online. You can go watch it. It'd be fun for you, I'm sure. And Ron speaks so highly of you guys. He always has.
Oh, he's a wonderful, wonderful gentleman.
And for everyone listening, Expeditions TV is the letter X, not EX, but the letter X, Peditions. So spell Expeditions, but take the E off of the front. So it's ExpeditionsTV.com. And there are some marvelous videos there. Marvelous stuff. I want to say hello to everyone who you've got gathered together watching the show tonight, so I'll wave to them, and I appreciate them so much for being
there. It's a wonderful compilation of psychics who work here at Star Visions alongside with myself and Helen, who owns it, and everyone's a big fan of your show, of course, Kevin, and everyone is sure to become a big fan when Fate Magazine hits the stands. I'm going to go immediately and subscribe if I can online, but please let us know how to do that, Phyllis, because we want to be a part of your success.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Yes, you can order the e-version. Just actually, we don't have it posted yet on our website because the magazine... We waited for some last-minute information on the Frank R. Paul article, but you can email us at fate@fatemag.com and say we want the e-version, or if you want to subscribe, then we can get back to you, or customerservice@fatemag.com. But we'll definitely have that information up on our Fate store here in the next few days. But in the meantime,
well, I definitely want to get the print version.
Okay. Well, that'll be out, and that's $5.95 for the print version. The same as you find it at the bookstore. No shipping, no handling. The current edition is always $5.95.
It's worth it at twice the cost, Phyllis.
Thank you so much.
That is one of the best publications I've ever come in contact with. I loved it, and I encourage everyone listening, go subscribe. You're going to love this magazine if you're not already familiar with it.
Well, I appreciate that. We have 12 issues a year, 6 print issues, but if you do the e-subscription, then you get twice as many. So, yeah, but information's on our website.
All right. Jerry, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. Now, Phyllis, that video that he's talking about is very professionally done, and you'll be impressed. You ought to go take a look at it when you get a chance.
I definitely will. Well, Ron Quinn is just an absolute delight. We published a book he wrote called Little People, and if you haven't had him on your show, you definitely should. He's just the neatest person. He was a journalist, and he compiled all these collections of people on the East Coast up in the Catskill Mountains who saw personal experiences of little people out in the woods. What do you call them? Nature spirits or whatever. And there's like 20 or 30 different experiences from skeptical, normal, everyday, ordinary people who just saw things in the woods, saw them up in the trees, just having a good time. All these wonderful little people in another dimension that sometimes they just manifest themselves.
All righty. Let me give this telephone number out again, and then I'll get to this flash message. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, or toll-free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. The flash message just is a greeting, but it's from Antarctica. And I was talking about Antarctica last night on the show. And so it's kind of interesting to get this. But it just says, a small greeting from warm Antarctica again. And it's from Alad, and A-L-A-D, I guess it's pronounced Alad, in Antarctica. And Phyllis, did you know that one of the oldest internet radio stations that has been continuously broadcasting since it started is in Antarctica?
No, absolutely would not have believed that.
Yeah. It started in the very, very early days of internet radio, just like this show did. And the guy said, I wanted a place where I could be left alone to put this thing together like I wanted to put it together. So he moved to Antarctica.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's great music. It really is great music. And it's all music and no talk.
That just boggles the mind how those transmissions can come across that frozen world up to us.
Yeah. Well, Antarctica, you know, that might be something Fate Magazine might want to look at, because Antarctica has some places where it's not so cold. And that's very well documented by a film that was put together by the U.S. government. And that film was a film to document Admiral Byrd's last mission there, which was Operation High Jump.
Mm-hmm.
And in that film, they show it to you. 300 square miles with no ice. Liquid water lakes everywhere. Fresh water. I wouldn't say it was, you know, sunny and warm, but it was above freezing.
Amazing. Well, we did an article on Byrd sometime in the last year. Joe Fex did an article on Admiral Byrd.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, if there's anything weird, it's like fate has covered it sometime in the last 60 years. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, now, let me ask you, now you're the one that said it. You said, if it's anything weird, Fate Magazine has covered it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think of it as weird?
Well, no, but anything strange outside of established science, you know, it's like the tectonic plates. Fate talked about that before it was real, or before it was accepted by mainstream science. I mean, we've scooped science on a lot of things. We're mm-hmm. better than the National Enquirer, really. Yeah, anything that's been strange and otherworldly and unusual, we've definitely talked about it and reported on it.
Well, I'll tell you, during the break I was telling you that I'm an ex-cop.
Mm-hmm.
Cops see weird stuff all the time. And one of the things that's really weird is on YouTube, and it was filmed from the dash cam in a cop car. And the cop car was chasing another car. He had his lights and sirens on trying to stop this other car. This other car turns left, goes into a driveway, and the next thing you see as the cop car turns left is he's screeching to a halt because there's a chain link fence completely intact between him and the car that's getting away from him. Nobody knows how that car got through that fence.
Oh, dear. That's pretty bizarre.
It is, and, you know, it's one of those things where you say, now that's just impossible, but there it is. And it was captured by the cop car dash cam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and cops see weird stuff all the time. I wouldn't say every day every cop sees something strange, but all the time, somewhere out there, there's a cop facing something that's just not explainable.
Well, I think reality distorts, and kind of like Plastic Man, and strange things happen. We have some incredible police footage from photographs in fatal accidents where you can, and these are police photos that have been released in the Twin Cities to special people, and you can see the spirits rising out of the people in the car, like young kids have been drinking or something, and they'll get in a fatal accident. Excuse me. And you can actually see the lines of the spirits when the souls are rising out of the bodies of the people that have been killed. It's just really spooky, and these are police photographs.
Yeah, official photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I think we've got time for this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, I'm Dina Marie. I'm calling from Sedona, Arizona.
Well,
hi, Phyllis.
You said Dina?
Hi.
You said Dina?
Hi.
Your name is Dina?
How are you? Hey, I have one question for you, Phyllis. Okay. What is the best ghost story you've ever submitted?
One of the absolute best stories I have ever read in Fate magazine took place like some 50 years ago. Have you ever heard of Baraboo, Wisconsin?
No, I haven't. I'm sorry to say that.
But it's down near Madison, Wisconsin, and, you know, this spoils the whole story, but it's the summer home of the circuses. Remember the Barnum and Bailey circuses?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, there was an incredible experiences there at this kind of like little farm where crashings and bangings and strange things were going on, and basically, to make a long story short, spoil the story, but there's a mean animal trainer there who is cruel to elephants, and it was ghost elephants that were crashing against the house, and they trashed the house, they crashed against the house, and they trashed the barn. But there was nothing there that they could explain it happening. But it turned out that he was a really, really cruel man, and he beat the elephants and whipped them and did cruel things. And this was their retaliation and their revenge, that they literally pushed in the house and destroyed all the noises. I mean, it was like worse than Amityville Horror. And it was the elephants getting revenge from beyond the grave. It was just like, oh, my gosh. I feel
unbelievable.
So yeah, that was just like, I know, it was just like a magical story. I was rooting for the elephants when they, you know, I couldn't figure out, nobody can figure out why all these horrible noises and windows crashing and, you know, it sounded like a caterpillar drove into the side of the house and there was nothing there. But it was,
I love that when you're in the moment of something like that happening, how exciting it is.
Right.
That is such an inspirational story. You know, I myself, and yes, Kevin, this is Dina Marie. I am a clairvoyant medium from Sedona, Arizona. And
okay.
I also do ghost clearing myself.
All right,
so
Dina.
I'm really interested in seeing what Ms. Phyllis had to say, and I am very intrigued by your presence. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for checking in with us.
And thank both of you, one for the question and one for the answer. We have to step away for a break, and we shall return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Phyllis Galdi. She is the owner and publisher of Fate Magazine, an absolutely outstanding magazine, and one that many of you over the years have read. You're familiar with it. Well, here she is, the First Lady of Paranormal, Phyllis Galdi, owner and publisher of Fate Magazine. Phyllis, you were talking about this two situations that I found very interesting. One, the police photographs of fatal accidents that show the soul or spirit or ghost of the person rising out of the body. Now, did you publish those in Fate Magazine?
No, not yet. These were exclusive police photos that were given to Echo Bonin, a noted psychic in town, and an associate of hers was demonstrating them at a paranormal conference up at Palmer House in Sauk Center, Minnesota, this haunted, wonderful hotel. And, I mean, I was just blown away that, it's like these swirly streaks coming out of this car. And if there's, like, three people that died in the car, there was, like three streaks coming out of the roof of the car. It was like a long kind of a white light. And the fact that there were quite a few of these pictures, it wasn't just an anomaly. It wasn't like freak photography. It was actually police photos.
Mm-hmm.
And as being a police officer yourself, you know that you're very skeptical and you're very objective and not given to fanciful things. It's just the facts, ma'am. These photos or these streaks of light showed up over and over of these photos was just so compelling and very, very disturbing.
Yeah.
Because it was like the souls were very disturbed. Of course, if you're killed in a car accident, your soul is not happy. It's not like a normal kind of death.
Yeah, it's kind of, I would think it would be sort of like, hey, wait a minute, this was not supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is James from Texas.
Hello, James.
Kevin.
Hello, James. How are you?
Fine.
Good.
I wanted to pay my respects to Mrs. Galday and just about echo everything that Jerry said. And I'd like to ask her a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Miss Galday, is there any way to research your back issues with a subject index?
Yes, this is your lucky day, sir. We are just now putting online, we have a whole index from 1948 of all subject matter on a given topic, and we can do photocopies of articles. So, yes.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, the best of luck, and I'm going to subscribe because I want those issues in my grubby little paw.
Well, there's lots of good reading there, they're as timely today as they were 60 years ago. We're creating our very first issues and reprinting them, too, and we have a lot of e-issues now, electronic issues.
You were talking about the elephant, or elephants that were tearing up that circus camp. Did you know that prize elephant of the Barnum and Bailey Circus was Jumbo, and that Jumbo ate one of his trainers?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, you wonder why.
No, well, justice on earth. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for the call, James. All right, 623-444-5889 is the main number. And in the USA and Canada, we also have a toll-free number. If you need to call me toll-free, you may do so. If you are in the USA or Canada, you can call that toll-free number. Otherwise, you can do the flash message. On the website, you just go to the website and you'll see a graphic about tonight's show. And on the right side of the graphic, you'll see the link that says Flash Message. And, Alad in Antarctica has sent me coordinates to something he says I may want to look at. It's 5 to 8 miles long. Okay, we'll take a look at that. I can't do it right now while I'm on the air a lot, but I'll take a look at it after we go off the air, okay?
And maybe it may be something like the Aurora Borealis.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. He just says, I sent you a coordinate on something you may want to take a look at, 5 to 8 miles long. And,
what did you think about thing above Norway when they were having the peace?
You say, what do I think about it?
Yeah, do you think it was HARP?
I have no idea what that was. I have a difficult time buying that it was a missile of any kind. It didn't act like a missile. But was it HARP, or was it something similar to HARP, or was it generated by the Large Hadron Collider, which is not far away? I don't know. I don't know what it was. But, you know, one of the things about that, Phyllis, those people there were amazed, and they see missile tests all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this amazed them. And so I don't, just that fact alone would tell me, nah, that's not a missile.
Right, right. Yeah, it's pretty freaky. We can't explain all the things that go on. Same way with Chicago at the airport there. They had that kind of UFO happened above, right above their noses, and they couldn't explain that.
Yeah, you know, and it's disturbing to me that the media usually would just pass over that. But it's something really a plus for media that, in this case, a hard-nosed, everyday reporter at the Chicago Tribune reported it straight and dug into it and did some investigative reporting and proved that the FAA and the airline officials were lying when they said no one had reported it. Do what?
It's almost like the War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
They didn't want to scare the people.
Well, you know, these people that are so-called officials at companies and so-called officials in the government, they need to wise up. It's not us that's scared, it's them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly so. Yeah, it's a loss of power and control.
Yeah. We're not scared of it. You know, people out on the street are talking about it all the time. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like, you know, the officials always, you know, well, we don't want to create public panic. Well, don't. You know, just report it. We already saw it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like the Phoenix Lights, there's just, you know, there's so many things going on all the time that people see every day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and one of the interesting things in the Phoenix Lights situation was the governor did that silly press conference where he just ridiculed the whole idea. And he said, well, you know, everybody, it was getting overheated. It was almost a state of hysteria. That's nonsense. It was not. People were asking questions about who's investigating this. That's all. And those are the kinds of questions that make politicians hysterical.
Exactly.
The people were not hysterical, just the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good point.
Now, let's talk about the elephants for a minute. Because I had a question about that I didn't get to ask.
Okay.
How did they know it was the spirit of the elephants?
Well, they didn't at first. This entity just raised hell with this house and this barn and knocked the walls down. And it was just phenomenal, the noise but there was nothing there. And then I guess later, after it all happened, then the person that had lived in the house was a former elephant trainer.
Okay, so they just sort of connected the dots there.
Right, right. They put two and two together after it happened. Because there was just no explanation. It was like a bulldozer was crashing into the house. And this happened back in the 50s. It was, it was pretty amazing.
Well, I know because you read articles that come in. You have to because you're also editor of Fate Magazine. I know that you will have at some point read some things about shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is something that I know exists. I don't think it exists. I know it exists. But I have no idea who they are. Do you have any idea who they are?
No, I think there's entities, there's other dimensions that we can't see. We live in the third dimension, and I think there's things that move in parallel dimensions. I think Bigfoot lives in a parallel dimension. I think UFOs and ghosts and there's things that can move between the dimensions, and that's when we see things. But I don't know, the shadow people are just lost people, or they're, I mean, it's just like you go into a bar and you see bad people and good people and people that hit on you, and I think the ghost world is kind of like that. There's just life goes on just in another dimension. I've seen, you know, ghosts all my life and seen dead people, and I've seen good ones, I've seen bad ones, I've had attempted possessions of my body and have fought it off. So I think it's just life goes on just in another frequency.
The last place that I was stationed as an international police officer was East Timor. And I won't get into all the weirdness that happens in East Timor, but there are a lot of articles for Fate magazine out of East Timor, I can tell you. But I was a police commander, and I had one of my officers that came to me. He is a longtime police officer. He's a seasoned police officer. Being an international police officer, he's one of the top cops in the world. He came to me one day and he told me, just very matter-of-factly, about an encounter he had the night before with a shadow person. And he was not awestruck. There was no fear. He was not shaking. He was just very matter-of-fact, telling it as he would. Like a cop would tell another cop about, hey, I stopped a Ferrari last night and wrote him a ticket, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just very matter of fact, and he told me about it. There was so much weirdness that took place in East Timor that there was no doubt in my mind that this took place. We'll be back after this break, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach, and that means we only have a few minutes left. We're talking this evening with Phyllis Galdi, and she is the owner and publisher of Fate Magazine. If you have a question or comment for her, you certainly have the opportunity to ask her yourself or make the comment yourself, and you do that by calling our telephone number. It is 623-444-5889. Toll free, if you need to call me toll free, it is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, and I will read it here on the air. Okay? Phyllis, during the break, before the break, I was talking about this shadow person that one of my officers had an encounter with, and during the break I told you about the dogs. Now, my audience has heard the story about the dogs of East Timor. I've told it several times, and it's a spooky story. It really is spooky, especially if you're out there in the jungle and experiencing it at midnight every night. It's a spooky story. Now, there are people around the world in highly advanced technological cultures who would say, oh, that's just nonsense, that's hallucinations. Well, then all the dogs in this part of East Timor are hallucinating. all of them. But it's not a hallucination to report what the dogs did. And that's the point. The point is, something's up. I don't know what it is, but something. And I think we can say that about all areas of the paranormal. We may not have an answer for it, but something's up, and that means, you know, it's real. It's not imagination. Do you even try to talk with folks that have the attitude that it's all imagination and hallucination? Do you even try to convince them otherwise?
No, it doesn't do any good. It's kind of like arguing politics or religion. That you put the information in front of people, and if they don't want to accept it, there's really no convincing them. I kind of have the idea that, not that I wish death on anyone, but for instance, say the amazing Randy, who is the arch skeptic, and it's like, when he dies, I can't wait for him to see, like, oh my God, I'm not really dead, that things are still happening. And it's just like, you know, the best revenge is when he passes on and he sees that he was totally wrong. I mean, I hope he lives a long and healthy life, but when he does pass on, he's in for a huge shock. Because he'll still be just as conscious as he was when he was, quote, alive in the flesh.
Yeah, but, you know, now, I have a lot of problems with Randy. Not personally, I don't know him, but I have a lot of problems with his approach to things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll give credit where credit's due. He does expose a lot of the frauds, and that needed to be done. And, you know, I would applaud him. The problem is when you go beyond that and you try to say that all of it is fraud, then that statement itself is fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point he becomes, well, it's kind of like Pogo said, we has seen the enemy and they is us.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes his own enemy at that point.
Right. You throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, at Fate, we're skeptical of a lot of things too. But sometimes there's just irrefutable evidence. Sometimes it's personal experiences, and you just got to open your eyes and like maybe this really did happen.
Well, a lot of things happen for which there is no explanation. And, I mean, I was in a car accident when I was 15 years old, 16, somewhere along in there. The hood of the car, I got hit head on by a drunk guy. And, boy, you talk about a paranormal experience. This guy's on the wrong side of the road at night with his lights off, hits me head on, he's drunk, I get 5 tickets. He got nothing. Now, fortunately, there was a judge 4 cars back who witnessed it and showed up to testify in my behalf. And the officer threatened to arrest him when he tried to talk to him at the scene. But anyway, the hood of the car was driven through the windshield and should have taken my head off. It didn't. The transmission was driven up through the floorboard and into the compartment where I was sitting. This was a serious wreck, and everybody walked away from it with no injuries. That's paranormal. I mean, I'm now certified and have been for a number of years in investigation of traffic accidents. And I can tell you, there's no way you could walk away from this accident, and yet everyone did.
Well, yeah, sometimes that happens. I was involved in a motorcycle accident. I was with a friend, and we were drinking, and we were driving like 50 miles an hour down the street in Des Moines, Iowa, and we came up over the hill, and there was like these big concrete barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And we should have been dead. We should have hit it. And it was like, you know, he tried to turn the motorcycle around. It was like the hand of God lifted up that bicycle and gently turned it around. And we were both like, oh, my God. I mean, yeah, we should have been dead. We should have hit that thing head on. There's no way we could stop or turn around. And You know, if it's not your time, it's not your time. Somebody paranormal, very powerful, picked up that motorcycle and moved it where it mm-hmm. needed to be. So, yeah, it totally, you know, there's very, very many powerful forces that we don't understand.
You know, a group of people who, if they would open up and talk about it, would have a lot of paranormal experiences they could share with us, and that would be pastors of churches who sit with people when they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
They seem reticent to talk about it in terms of it being paranormal, but it is. There's no scientific explanation for a lot of the things that they have witnessed, that they have seen, and they would have a lot of information if they'd open up and talk about it.
I think they look upon it as spiritual. Doctors are more and more open to that now too, about near death experiences and paranormal things happening in hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, one of the major books that was written about near death experiences was written by an MD. I can't remember the name right now, but it was one of the first written by a doctor. It talks about death and near-death experiences, and sort of kicked off the era of doctors being open to it.
Mm-hmm. It's coming around. People are more and more open to this now, thank goodness. It's becoming more accepted and more normal. We're not fringe weirdos.
Well, I may not be fringe, but I'm still a weirdo.
In the best way.
Phyllis, we only have about a minute left. Let me ask you to tell us again where people need to go so they can get signed up and subscribed to Fate Magazine.
Visit our website, fatemag.com, and there's information on our website. Call our 800 number, 1-800-728-2730, and tell us what you want, and we'll take care of you.
All right. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. We've got a little bit of sci-fi theater for those of you watching our TV channel, so stay tuned. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.